Welcome to Thriving in Your Third Act, a free online event featuring bold women leaders who are sharing their favorite tips, tools, and practices to help you find fire and fulfillment after 50. Share this event with your friends and family and come join us on Facebook at The Shift Network. And now your host, Sabrina Chaw.
Welcome, everyone. I've been looking forward to introducing you to Rosemary Gladstar. Rosemary is literally a star figure in the field of modern herbalism, internationally renowned for her technical knowledge and stewardship in the global herbalist community. She has been learning, teaching, and writing about herbs for over 40 years and is the author of 11 books, including the book Herbal Healing for Women. Rosemary, welcome to the summit.
Thank you, Sabrina. I'm honored to be here as one of your guests. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's so great having you here. And you know, Rosemary, I thought I would start with the basics about just talking about plants in general. Now, I know plants are sacred and they are of the earth, and there is a long association that people have with plants. So why do you think plants have been revered around the world for their healing properties?
Well, I think mostly they've been revered because they work so well as medicine on so many levels, like medicine for the body, medicine for the spirit, for the mind. We don't always seem like it, but we actually are an intelligent species. And if plants didn't work as medicine, we would have discarded them a long time ago. And in fact, in the process of evolution, herbalism, of course, has changed. It's not like even the traditional uses, they're always evolving and changing. And so what we have today is the distilled, the best of herbalism that's been distilled down. So throughout time, people have tried things, and if they didn't work, they were discarded. But all, really around the world, herbalism is considered the primary system of healing. In fact, the World Health Organization stated a few years ago that 82% of the world's population uses plant medicine as their primary system, not secondary, but primary system of healing. And I think that that percentage has even gone up because, especially in this country, but also in other parts of the world, people are re-recognizing the importance and the power of herbal medicine. So I think that is one of the reasons that it's been revered and respected so much, is because it does work. And it, to me, it's like, one of the most integrative systems of healing, that because it integrates so well into other systems, like into bodywork systems, into modern medicine, allopathic medicine, it can be very integrative. So even as a system by itself, it's great, but it's even better when it's integrated into other systems of healing.
Yes, and speaking about the more allopathic ways of like medication, do you think herbs are more superior to those? I mean, you say they complement each other, they work together, but certain medications, of course, have side effects, and maybe you can speak about do herbs have side effects as well? Do you consider herbs more superior to medications? As you say, it's more of an integrated system of healing.
Well, I definitely don't think that it's a superior system of healing. And in fact, there are many times when allopathic medicine is superior. For instance, massive heart attacks, herbalism might be really good as a tonifier. It can be really helpful for building heart strength and helping with emotional issues. But when people are having massive heart attacks, herbalism isn't going to work anywhere like modern medicine, or like a bad accident when you have third degree burns and modern medicine. So especially in crises and in accidents and in life-threatening situations, modern medicine is superior. But in any of our chronic disorders, long-term illnesses, any of the home remedies, which is the primary thing that most people work with, are all the everyday illnesses, the headaches, the colds, even the flus that people get, herbalism is really superior. And it's superior for a number of reasons in those situations. One is it's very ecologically sound. In other words, it doesn't have bad side effects as far as the environment goes. All of the plants will break down easily. They don't pollute water and don't pollute our systems even. And really with the huge amounts of plants available to us, many of them, most of those don't have side effects at all. The major ones that did, like for instance, some of our like opium poppies and stuff, they're not available to us to use for good reason, I might add. So all of the general herbs that we have available to us that are recognized as safe for us to use. I mean, if they have side effects, they're minor, like you might have an allergic reaction, what's called an idiosyncratic reaction. You might get itchy eyes, you know, a swollen throat that might not feel minor to you, but, you know, if you stop using the herb, it's going to go away. So that's another real advantage of them. But I think the thing that I love the most about herbs, and I would say one of the reasons I love them, there are many reasons I love them, but one of them is because it's a self-empowering system. And it's really about you and your body and your health and your well-being and you allowing yourself to make right choices, which doesn't mean that you don't consult, doesn't mean you don't go to doctors, but ultimately your body is your responsibility. And the plants help us learn that because especially when you get into growing and making your medicine, it starts to engage you with your own health, where so much of modern medicine is a disengagement. I mean, we're taught at one time that we didn't know what was best for our bodies. I mean, please, nobody knows your body better than yourself. Even a skilled practitioner won't know your body as well as yourself, how a drug or an herb is reacting in your body. And so that's one of the things I love about the plants. It's like, yeah, take a little of your healing power back, you know, and own it. So,
Rosemary, I really appreciate what you're saying about plants and how plants help us discover the healing properties of our own bodies. And medications often might suppress the communication messages that our body is giving us. So why do you think it's more important for women to use herbs as they age?
Well, they offer us so much. I mean, you know, I would move out of the medicine context and just look at them as a way of life. And that's really the grandness of what herbs are. They are a medical system, but they're far more about health and well-being. There's a wonderful group of herbs that are called adaptogens and tonics. They're actually called superior medicine in traditional Chinese medicine and rasana herbs in the Ayurvedic system. So all around the world, cultures had developed relationships with plants that were used for restorative and tonifying our bodies and creating energy. So not really for medicinal purposes other than just helping us feel more zesty and alive and juicy. And so, you know, especially for women as we're saging, I like to call it, as we're growing older and, you know, moving into that third act, is we need those herbs and we need lifestyle changes that help us to stay creative and zesty and full of energy. And so there is this great group of herbs that without being medicine, but just again, like food, that are very concentrated, that help restore energy. And so, yeah, why not use them? You know, most of them are readily available. A lot of them are inexpensive, or you can grow them yourself. It's really easy to make your own medicine if you like to do, you know, make your own preparations if you like to do that. So yeah, they can, you know, help so much with our bodies as we're aging, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of the herbs and herbal remedies that you recommend as we age. So for example, what do you think are the most important for women who are going through, say, perimenopause, women maybe in their 40s, maybe menopause, women in their 50s and beyond?
Well, there's a group of herbs that I really recommend. And as I said, most of these herbs are classified as adaptogens or tonics. And some that I think are really, really good are rhodiola, which I love. It's actually specific for women going through menopause because it's energizing to the body, but has no caffeine in it. It just restores energy. It's really good for the adrenals, which often by the time women reach their late 40s and 50s, the adrenals are really exhausted. And many of the symptoms that we call symptoms of menopause are actually just unhealthy aging, adrenal exhaustion, you know, tiredness, fatigue. And so rhodiola is really helpful for restoring energy. Also specifically for women, it's odd because it's an herb that enhances and increases energy. But for women who have a hard time sleeping, specifically for women going through menopause, who have a hard time sleeping at night, rhodiola, if it's taken early in the day, can really help with women sleeping. And I've seen that both on myself and other women when they were going through their menopausal years. It was kind of spread just by word of mouth that women started noting if they were taking, were using the rhodiola in the morning time, that they were able to sleep at night. So it's really a wonderful herb for that. And then
Rosemary, when you mention each of the herbs, can you just spell it for us just to make sure that we have it down?
Yeah, rhodiola, and it, you know, some of these herbs have funny names, but they're really, all of these are common. I'm going to only be talking about herbs that either you can easily get at an herb store or, you know, one of the online resources, and even grow a lot of them. So rhodiola is spelled R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, and it's, rhodiola is both its common name and its botanical name. So it wouldn't grow in a large part of this country, but it does grow in cold weather climates like Vermont, where I live, so we can actually grow it here. Another herb that has, a very odd sound, but it's probably one of the most popular herbs in our country today, and definitely one of the most popular herbs used in the Ayurvedic system of healing, and it's called ashwagandha. Again, a very easy herb to grow throughout the North American continent, especially in the northern temperate regions. But ashwagandha is an herb that's used for stress and anxiety, but also, again, it's uplifting to the spirits. It's kind of uplifting to the body. And so it has this, what we call amphrotetic or either or action, kind of helps your body restore what it needs. So if you need to be more relaxed and sleepy, it helps with that. But if you need more energy, it's helpful for that too. And it's also used for sexual depletion. And it's oftentimes classified for men, but quite honestly, these herbs cross over. They're not gender specific by any means. So a lot of times when you'd read about an herb being specifically for men, it was mostly because the only herbs used for sexuality were related to men, and as if women didn't have sexual needs, right? But ashwagandha is really good for women as well as men, and it's very restorative to sexual depletion. And it's probably the most widely drank in herb in India in the evening as an evening tea to help people relax and to sleep deeply. So we, you know, I think a lot of what happens when women are going through menopause is that there's this stress and anxiety that's happening because, and here we're not talking about all the stress on the outside of the world, but inside there's that anxiety because, again, our hormones are shifting and changing just like they did when we were in puberty, right? And there's this unknown, this anxiety, because we're not familiar with what's happening in our bodies. So ashwagandha is a really good herb. It just, I always say it makes you feel like a deep sigh into yourself, like, ah, I'm home. It's really great for that. And then another herb that's...
Just one other thing, Rosemary, can you spell that for us?
Oh, yes, ashwagandha is spelled A-S-H-W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A, ashwagandha.
Thank you for spelling ashwagandha, Rosemary, and go ahead and continue.
Yeah, and then there's a number of herbs, but another one that I really love for women in those menopausal years is hawthorn, because hawthorn is such a marvelous heart tonic. Again, we're looking at herbs more as tonics rather than medicines here, and it just has a long history of being used for heart issues, and you know, I always suggest it both for men and women, actually, who are in their late 40s and early 50s and onwards, to really use hawthorn a lot, because we have so many heart diseases and heart issues in this culture. But another reason I love it is because on the emotional level, hawthorn just helps with any kind of deep-seated grief and sorrow. A lot of that letting go feeling that's happening as women are moving into their midlives, into that, into their, you know, menopausal years. A lot of times there's grieving about what you're letting go. For some women, it's even the grieving of letting go of their cycle, which symbolizes their fertility and stuff. And then it's welcoming in the new year, in the new cycle. And hawthorn is just a wonderful herb that helps with that sorrow and helps lift up the spirits. It's very, very uplifting. Of course, you can't just take it one time and expect that to happen. It has to be used over a period of time, but it's one of my favorite herbs for, you know, just lifting the heart up, as well as a heart tonic. So I think it's an herb that's really important for all men and women in their mid-years. Do you want a few more? I have more herbs to mention. I can.
Absolutely. Well, some of the things I'm interested in is like moods and memory support. And let's start with a couple of those and then continue.
Well, for mood lifting, which, you know, the herbs themselves are not going to just lift our moods up necessarily, though I would say the act of going out and picking fresh blossoms and leaves and bringing in and making tea oftentimes begins to elevate how we're feeling. And just that simple gesture of working with the plants and doing something for ourselves can be uplifting, or bringing flowers in and making a foot bath can really do that. But there are herbs that are what we consider uplifting to the to our moods that are helping with mild depression. Probably one of the most well-known of that is St. John's Wort, or St. Joan's Wort, as some herbalists like to call it. And I usually like to, because it is used for mild depression. It's not indicated for really serious, life-threatening depression by any means. But when people have just that mild depression, or just, you know, feeling like that their moods are down or their spirits are just down, drinking St. John's Wort, and I usually love to mix it with lemon balm and hawthorn. That's one of my favorite teas, a combination of, and it can be equal parts to keep it simple for people. Just take, you know, equal parts of hawthorn, lemon balm, and St. John's Wort. And if you are agitated and you have, you know, those nerves that get really like, feel like they're screaming all the time and on fire, you want to add milky oats, because milky oats is very calming to the nervous system. So that is actually a really popular recipe that a lot of people use to help lift their moods up. And again, I want to emphasize that just drinking a cup of that is not going to work, but drinking two or three cups of that, adding a little honey to it to make it taste really good, or a little peppermint, and drinking it for a few days, you definitely do start to notice that your mood feels a little better and you feel better. And, you know, and then you're able to do your deep breathing and your yoga and all the other things that help to impact the way that we feel. So, mm-hmm.
And you mentioned, Rosemary, adding milky oats to the mixture of lemon balm and hawthorn. What do you mean by milky oats?
Thank you, Sabrina. Yeah. So milky oats are the same oats that we use in oatmeal, except when we use it as a grain, when we use it in our cookies and make cereal, et cetera, with it, we're using the ripe oats. But when herbalists use it, we use it when it's still green. It's harvested at a green stage, and it's called milky oats because at the tip of the oat, there's actually a little, if you squeeze it, there's a little milky oat that comes out. But anyway, it's the, if you were to gather it or to buy oats for making tea, you buy what's called milky oats, and it's kind of a green looking oat. So it's the same oats, and they're called Sativa fatua, the botanical name. It's the same oats that we're using, but we use it at a different stage of growth when you're using it for herbal purposes.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yes. Sometimes I forget, and so your reminders are really helpful.
Great, yes. And so that sounds great. So it's a mood lifting, and how about memory support?
Yeah, so I definitely noticed, and many women do notice when they go through menopause, and it's hormonal. It's not really the brain so much as hormonal. The hormones are shifting and changing, and again, there's a lot of agitation going on inside the system because change usually is a little agitating, you know, we don't feel in our calm, normal place. And so a lot of times when women go through menopause, they get very worried because they start to have short-term and long-term memory loss. And I noticed that myself when I was going through menopause. The herbs, I can say, definitely help. There's a few herbs that are really helpful, and they have a long reputation, a long history being used. So one is ginkgo. Ginkgo is a beautiful large tree that is found growing around the world, and we often see it as an ornamental tree in cities. It was planted along many city blocks and in parks, and it also in colleges you find beautiful old specimens. So the part that's used as a memory enhancer are the leaves of the ginkgos. And I always find it's really interesting because ginkgo is the sole surviving member of an ancient genus of trees that used to cover the planet, right? So there's only this one species left. And I always think like the memories that, you know, if you were the sole surviving member of the human race, the memories that you would have to hold in your system, right? Because herbs are working not only by their chemical constituents, but also by the very fact of their beings. Like you mentioned earlier when we first began talking about the spiritual nature. So when we're drinking these living beings, these creatures, they're also impacting us on deeper levels than just the chemical constituents. So when I'm drinking my ginkgo and taking my ginkgo tincture, I'm also thinking that, you know, this ancient tree is holding the memories of an entire genesis of species that has long disappeared. And that really impacts me when I'm drinking it. I really take that deeply. But nonetheless, there have been a lot of scientific research done on the ginkgo leaves, and most of them do show that they have a good impact on memory. And in fact, there were some studies done with the chemical constituent, just the ginkgo side. So not the whole plant, but the standardized ginkgosides. And using those on early onset dementia and Alzheimer's, it actually was able to slow the progress. So we do have some good research on that as well. I usually like to blend ginkgo with gotocola, which is another adaptogen herb that has a long history of being used for enhancing memory. And in fact, where gotocola grows naturally, which is in the Himalayas, high in the mountains, the people there, the cultures there who use that plant live to be very old. So it's one of the places that is studied often for longevity, and they have no dementia. They don't even know what the word is. When people, they live to be 100 years old and they have memories as sharp and clear as when they're young. And they claim that it's because of the gotocola. They use it like a salad green. It actually grows a little bit like a violet. It's a small ground cover. It's quite tasty and it's grown as a green. So they use it just as a salad. And they say like 3 or 4 leaves a day helps keep their brains really sharp. So I like to use the ginkgo and the gotocola together.
Can you spell that, Rosemary? Gotocola?
Yeah, gotocola is G-O-T-A, and then the second word is K-O-L-A, gotocola. And then I like to mix it with rosemary, which is a really powerful antioxidant and also has brain memory enhancers in it. It has a long history of being used for helping with memory. In fact, we have, what did Shakespeare say? Here's rosemary, pray for remembrance, right? And it used to be used for people who had hysteria and just as a long history being used as a memory enhancer.
Can I just ask you a question about that, Rosemary, about memory enhancer? So can these herbs help us retrieve what has been lost? In other words, sort of, or is it just kind of like, you know, at this point, it'll help us maintain our memory, or like you say, memory enhancement?
I would say that's a better, more appropriate way to say it. And also, like most of the memory loss that happens through menopause, unless a woman is really unhealthy and not taking care of herself, is going to come back as soon as that balance is attained again, you know, that shift has happened. And that's why it's so important to use these herbs and to use lifestyle changes, because, you know, if as we aid ourselves through all the changes of our lives, we come through them healthier and better. And so and also it's helpful because, you know, it's a little scary when you can't remember where your grocery list is, you know, or what's on it. And so really, honestly, when you drink these teas or take them as tinctures, whichever way fits into your lifestyle, you begin to note again, oh yeah, I know where my memory, I know where that grocery list is. And then you start to remember what's on their list without even having to see it. So you can actually see that marked difference. And I know that's true from myself using it, but also hundreds of other people who have used that same formula.
Mm-hmm. Great.
It's a good one.
Yes, it sounds like a great one. And how about skin health?
You mean just like externally treatments or internal, or are you thinking both? Or
Either one that you might suggest that really helps the vibrancy of our skin, either internally or externally.
Yeah, I mean, really to have vibrant skin, we have to treat it from inside. So there, you know, mostly what I would say is we want to really concentrate on foods that are high in nutrients and definitely the herbs. And so minerals and trace minerals that are very hard to get these days are often found very readily in the herbs. So some of my favorite herbs for skin balancing are as an herb called dandelion, of course, that's familiar with everybody, and burdock, combining those two because they help with liver health. So oftentimes when there's liver congestion or the liver isn't functioning as well as it should, then toxicity builds up and it works out through our skin, which I might say is better than it being stored in our bodies. So when people have a lot of skin issues, I usually look at that as a good sign because it's an indicator that there's internal things that are happening. And usually by treating the liver, that would be the first place that an herbalist would usually work, is working with nourishing the liver and helping the liver to function better. So dandelion and burdock are probably the classic two herbs that are used for that. I usually would recommend burdock for teenagers. It's definitely good for women going through menopause as well. And it's actually quite tasty. Many of the herbs that we're using medicinally are oftentimes very bitter. This is one of the reasons why compliancy sometimes isn't so good. So oftentimes people are not so apt to drink tea, but will take tinctures or capsules instead. But burdock is quite tasty. And so you can usually down that readily. But if not, you can take it as a tincture. And then there's all kinds of wonderful, another herb I would recommend highly for internal purposes is nettle, because it's so high in nutrients and calcium and also all the trace minerals it's very rich in, but also because it's a liver decongestor, it helps the liver to function better. We call it a alterative herb is the classic title for that. And then I was going to mention there's wonderful, wonderful natural preparations. Now, I know when I was in my early 20s, it was so hard to find good products, right, to put on our skin. I mean, they were really hardly available. And so I started a whole cosmetic line that became very popular with my own creams and toners for the skin. And so I have many of my books, I have recipes for how to make your own totally natural products because, you know, they just work so well on your skin. It used to be easy, like when I was 20 and 30 and I was teaching and, you know, I had that naturally glowing skin, but I'm in my 70s now and I still get really good compliments. Like, what do you put on your skin? And I say, well, I put my cream and my own herbal tonics and stuff. And of course I drink my teas religiously. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that you were just mentioning, Rosemary, I noticed you say like the teas and things like that. So is that the way that you recommend we take these herbs, mainly through tea or their capsules or, you know, so the question is, what is the best form to take them? How often should we take them? When do we take them and how much? I mean, maybe, I don't know if you want to capture each of the ones that you already mentioned, or maybe you want to make a general statement about it, but elucidate us on that if you could.
That's a perfect question. And I'd like to be more general in the answer and then, so I wanted to say the very best way to take the herbs is the way that you'll take them, because while I might like teas, you may not want to drink tea 3 times a day, for instance. So I found a long time ago that even though some herbs are better prepared in water and some better prepared in alcohol, and that it's not going to matter. It's really what's going to matter is the way that the person will take it on a more regular basis. So herbs come in many, you know, in many different preparations. Tea is my favorite way because it does take a few minutes to make a good herbal tea. It involves us in the process, especially if you're working on a health issue. It actually makes you become more involved, which I feel is important in our self-healing journey. It also, just on a daily level, it slows you down a little bit. The herbs are often beautiful in the brew jar, you know. So there's a moment of pleasure. There's all kinds of reasons. Also, water is one of our most used, especially if you're using good quality water, is one of our most user-friendly solvents for, you know, rendering the herbs. So for all kinds of reasons, I think it's just beautiful to make tea. But I've recognized in my herbal work over the years that not everybody is going to drink tea on a regular basis. So in those cases, I would recommend tinctures, which are potent alcoholic extracts. And they're not always done in alcohol. Sometimes they're done in apple cider vinegar or glycerin. So they're not always alcoholic, but generally they are. And so that would be one way. And so they're very concentrated. They're pre-made. So you just usually just mix them with a little bit of water to take them. And that oftentimes makes it very easy for people to take their herbal, especially if it's medicine, to take their medicine on a regular basis. And then, of course, there's capsules, right, which is the form of medicine that most people think of today. You know, just swallow it down and there it is. I used to be very adamant against using capsules because capsules were your least best way of making herbs. They were this was early on, the herbs that were used in the powders were very poor quality. And today, I would say that's not true. We get really high quality herbal capsules that are, so again, it can be a really good form. And those are particularly good for people who do want to just swallow their medicine down. And then there's all kinds of fun ways. You know, there's syrups, there's herbal baths, there's foot baths. So there's a variety of ways for people to use their herbal, you know, to take their herbs and to involve themselves in what I would call an herbal way of living. As far as purport amounts, it varies. Like if you're taking herbs for just as tonics, as things that you can take on a regular basis, then we're usually looking at either a cup of tea 3 times a day or a couple times a day. It doesn't have to be specific because it's not for medicinal purposes. But if it's for medicinal purposes, then you're looking at you know, either half a cup or a cup of tea three times a day. It's usually pretty religious, you know. And I always suggest brewing it in quarts, not in cups. You know, have a quart and then just drink it at room temperature or warm it up to drink it. With tinctures, it's usually about anywhere from a fourth of a teaspoon to a half a teaspoon three times a day. These are very general dosages that we would say for a normal, whatever that is, human woman, that, you know, for normal sized person, but it varies a little bit, but we'd say a quarter to a half a teaspoon three times a day. And capsules, it's usually two capsules three times a day. As I said, that's pretty general. A really good herb book will really spell it out, you know, really give you better proportions. Or if you go see an herbalist, they'll usually give you recommendations. But those are really good general dosages. Does that answer that question, Sabrina?
It does. And I suspect, as you mentioned, that as we purchase these various herbs, the herbalist will recommend it, or perhaps on the bottle itself, in the case of capsules, it'll have some sort of recommended dosage.
They always will have a recommended dosage on them.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So let me ask you about maintaining dose control. Like, you know, if we steep some herb in water, you know, the active compounds can vary depending on, on the herb itself. So how do we know we're getting the dose that we want? I mean, is there should we look out for the expiration of herbs and how old they could be before we get rid of them? You know, because perhaps you need to put in more because they're older. I mean, how do we maintain proper dose control?
Well, you know, in herbalism, there's a word called organoleptic. It's actually using your senses to determine the quality of the herb, and really all the qualities of the herb, like the taste, the smell, the visuals of it, all of that we can tell just by our senses. And so it's just like judging really a vegetable. You know, you look at a vegetable, all of us who are at least in our menopausal years know how to tell a good vegetable or a good fruit, right? It's the very same senses that we use to tell if an herb, a dried herb or a fresh herb, is still good. You know, you open up your herb jar and it should smell lively. It should still be the color. If it's a green plant, it should be green. If it was a yellow flower, it should be very vibrantly yellow. The taste, herbs don't always taste good by any means, but they will have a very vibrant taste. And then it's always, is this plant working? That's probably the most arbitrary. That's difficult to tell because sometimes the herbs don't work immediately. They might work in a few days or, you know, we mentioned that earlier. So that's a little bit hard to tell. But so that's one of the things that I always do is like, you know, you even at the capsule, you open it up, it should still smell, taste, and have vibrancy to the color. Even though it's in a capsule, it's still a plant. So, you know, there is a way of telling, and it's not by year. You know, even expiration dates don't really tell the quality of an herb. You'll read in some books and they'll say, you know, after a year, the herbs are no good any longer. And that's actually, I want to go, yes, that's not true at all, because some herbs, like they have, their qualities will last for years and others won't last for 6 months. And you really, again, you tell that by just tasting, smelling, looking, you know, and trying the herb. So it's using your organoleptic testing sense, that ability, you know, our senses, sight, smell, taste, feel, to know if the herb is of good quality or not. But the bigger question is, how do you know that you're getting your proper dosage? If you follow the old formula, a teaspoon of herb per cup of water and let it steep for 5 minutes, you're going to have a very weak tea. And if what you're trying to get here is more than just the little taste of a mild chamomile tea, for instance, but really the medicinal properties, you need to use more herb and you need to let it steep longer. So when we're serious about making a really strong herb tea, I usually recommend, you know, 2 or 3 teaspoons and letting, if you're putting that in a cup, covering it tightly and letting it sit for at least 20 minutes, half an hour, if it's a leafy or a flowery plant. Better yet, put your herbs in the quart jar, use 2 or 3 ounces, and then cover it with boiling water, put a tight-fitting lid on, and let it sit overnight. And when we're working with people who are coming to see us as herbalists, that's really the way that we would suggest that they make their teas, most likely, you know, to have a really strong tea. And then you strain that in the morning, and you have a, you know, you have a very dark-colored water. You know that you have a lot of herb in there. So, and then to, you know, unless you're a clinical herbalist and you're really treating a disease where you need to be very specific, you might be using a very potent herb. You don't have to be as specific as you would as you're taking drugs, for instance, because again, side effects are very rare. You're not going to worry about, a little too much with the herbs. So, there are herbs definitely that I would be really specific about the dose, but they aren't the herbs that we're speaking about for general wellness and well-being and, helping us with our saging years. These would be herbs that you'd be using if people had serious illnesses and you were working with herbs or maybe using herbs with allopathic medicine where you had to be very careful. Then generally you're not using the teas, you're using tinctures and you're using standardized dosages. So you have the exact amounts per, every ounce.
That's very, very helpful, Rosemary. Thank you for clarifying that. Let me just sneak a couple other little remedies in here because I know our time is coming to a close, but what about joint and muscle support?
Yeah, those are big. I would say herbs can be really helpful for joint and muscles. There's an herb called Solomon's Seal and another one called Black Cohosh. Those herbs are more medicinal. They're totally safe to use and they have a long history of being used both by the doctors in this country, the early eclectic doctors. They were very fond of using those herbs for joint and bone and aching issues and stuff. Those herbs are very helpful. There's a lot of topical applications. There's some commercial ones like Tiger Balm that have a lot of herbs and essential oils in them that are made from herbs, of course, that are very helpful. But I would say with joint and bone issues, that's a place where I look for more like nutritional supplements and especially the omega-3s, the fatty acids for people who are having stiff and achy joints. Those to me really, really work. And the herbs are a complement to those. So we were talking earlier about how herbalism is such an integrative system that you can use it with all other systems. Sometimes I use it as a primary system and I use other systems to support it. And other times I'm using the herbs as a support system for other systems. So there's a favorite herb that I love so much, comfrey, but it's very controversial for bones and joints. So, I'm always hesitant to mention it, but it's one of my favorite herbs that I use myself for achy joints and the stiffness that happens as you get a little older.
Why is it controversial?
Well, because about 20 years ago, a little bit longer, maybe 25 years ago, comfrey is part of a large family of plants. There's many other plants, and there was several plants in the family that were discovered to have paralyzing alkaloids, which is a very toxic substance. And when ingested in large amounts, it causes a disease called vena occlusive liver disorder, where it shuts the veins down to the liver and it can be fatal if people don't know it. And in Afghanistan, there were tribes who died. Many people died from eating this plant. Remember, it was a relative of comfrey. It wasn't comfrey itself. But they tested lots of the plants in the family, and they did find that some varieties, not even the common variety of comfrey, but a Russian variety, have small amounts of that of the paralyzing alkaloids. So the FDA did put out a warning not to use comfrey anymore, and it's not available for internal use. People still use it externally, and they use it as a poultice and as a salve on joints. But I, for myself, I just found that the studies that were done on it were just terribly inconclusive. And in fact, the scientific research today is showing that those studies were inconclusive. And it was at a time when, they were blacklisting herbs for all kinds of reasons. We always say, if they use the same standards to judge drugs as they used to judge herbs, there wouldn't be one single drug on the market, because even the most common over-the-counter drug has more side effects than herbs do, like aspirin, for instance. But nonetheless, some herbalists still use it, but I would say that I would just be cautious to recommend it to everybody, because somebody might decide to take it and then they read this terrible information about it and they might get really scared. And I always say, you don't want to be scared when you're taking anything. If you're scared taking drugs, you should think about it twice, right?
That's a very good point. Really good point. Rosemary, can you spell Solomon's Seal for us?
It's Solomon, S-O-M-N, and then Seal, S-E-A-L,
Great.
Solomon's Seal. And then I mentioned also Black Cohosh, so Black, B-L-A-C-K, and Cohosh, C-O-H-O-S-H, Black Cohosh. Oh, by the way, Black Cohosh, we almost always hear about for menopausal women, right? It's probably the primary herb that's used for hormonal balancing. But it also has a really good effect on the joints and the bones and our joints, and then also for the nervous system. So it's kind of multi-purpose, but it's the primary herb. Above, I've said the primary substance, even over drugs, that's sold in Europe for women going through menopause who might have hot flashes and mood swings, etc. I always thought that was so interesting. It's from North America, and the North American people were hardly using it, but we were shipping tonnage amounts of it to Europe. It was just, you know, sold in every pharmacy throughout all of both Western and Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember using Black Cohosh myself, and it was a tremendous help while I was going through menopause. So thank you for mentioning that for that purpose as well. Rosemary, there's so much I'd love to just pick your brain about. I mean, this has just been so educational, and I know our time is coming to a close. I want to make sure that our listeners know about your special offer. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, yes, I have a wonderful adaptogen handout that I made for all the listeners, and also includes some of my favorite recipes. And these are not medicinal recipes because, as I said, I really try to, herbs can be an amazing medicinal, offer so many wonderful medicinal remedies for us, but they're much more than just medicine. They're really about life and health and vitality. And so I really like to try to get people to bring them back into their kitchen, which is the way our elders and our ancestors use them. So I also included a whole group of wonderful herbs that are recipes that are just like the chocolate adaptogen formulas for women in menopause. And yeah, and crone candy, my famous crone candy, which is a way to put a lot of these really powerful herbs in a candy that you can eat every day. And you're like taking your medicine, but it tastes really good. So yeah, I put together a great handout for our listeners.
Thank you for providing that. And I want to just let our listeners know that this PDF handout could be found at the link thrivinginyourthirdact.com/Rosemary, and that's where you'll be able to find it. And it'll also be listed in our website as well. Thank you so much, Rosemary, for elucidating us on all these fascinating herbs and how to take them. I can tell you are a exemplary example of beauty and radiance and vitality. And I know your herbs are a big part of that reason. Plus, you're just great. So thank you for being part of our summit today.
Thank you so much, Sabrina. I wish we had another hour. There's so much to share, but this was a nice little tidbit, a little treat, right?
Absolutely. It was such a great treat. And I want to let our listeners know that you can find more about Rosemary and at her websites, scienceandartofherbalism.com and also sagemountain.com. So you can find information there and join her there. And thank you, listeners, for joining in on this session. I hope you got as much as I did, and we hope to see you on the next call.
Thank you for joining us for Thriving in Your Third Act, brought to you by the Shift Network. To learn more, visit thrivinginyourthirdact.com. To join our global community of people awakening to their divine humanity and taking inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. Thank you again for gathering with us and sharing this empowering path with your friends and family.